thing with the IBF is that the next day you have to do a check-in, a check weight. You can only put on 10 pounds from your weight from the weigh-in. So he weighed in at 10.7 and he could be no more than 11.3. And you have to go down the next day and get weighed in. And, you know, Kel had a good feed and got rehydrated before the weigh-in and went down, did the check weigh-in, not a problem. And Eddie Hearn told me that Sean Porter came down with his dad, and his dad said to him, "How did you sleep?" And he just like shook his head and put his head down as if saying, "No, it was a bad night's sleep." And you know, just by that mentally, you know, Kel's in a different place to Sean Porter. So, you know, that was the morning of the fight. We had breakfast together. Kel was chilled out all day. We did his food. He relaxed. He went to bed in the afternoon, had a sleep. And by the time he woke up, you could see that he'd got his mind on what he was doing.
From an outsider's point of view, you know, seeing all the preparation and seeing all the media work, it just looked like everything had gone perfectly for Kel. He was in fantastic shape at that weigh-in, wasn't he? He seemed very relaxed speaking to the media. And it did seem different to Porter. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think the pressure was on Porter, and it's like they were always talking about Sean Porter walking through Kel. But the prospect of fighting, when you're a fighter and you've got to fight a guy who's had 32 fights and 32 wins, it doesn't matter what whatever his opinion of that kid is. If you've knocked out 22 of those opponents, you are a force to be reckoned with. You can never underestimate it. And if, from my point of view, if Kel was fighting and coming up with that kind of opponent, you know, you've got to think, you've got to respect what they've got. And if you underestimate that opponent, you're going to get beat. And I think somewhere down the line, I think because Sean Porter had a great win against Paulie Malignaggi, who people consider a good fighter, and that nobody ever does that to him, at some point somebody's going to, because he's getting older. And I think he read so much into that win himself that he was invincible. And you know, I looked at that and I just thought, yeah, it's a good win, but he's not the best fighter on the planet. And I think Sean Porter probably underestimated Kel.
Barry Awad is with us as well, Kid Galahad. You had a chance to be there as well and to experience it all. Give us sort of a fighter's perspective on what you were seeing in Kel as he was sort of making these final preparations for that fight.
I personally believe you could have put anyone in front of Kel that night and I don't think anyone would have beat him, because he was so ready. He missed his opportunity 3 times and he weren't letting this one go.
You must have got a real buzz out of being there and sort of experiencing all of that and seeing what it was like. It must have really made you even more hungry.
It's made me even more hungrier. And it just shows you that if you put the hard work in, anything can be possible.
I want to come back and we'll go into that point a little bit further later on, but Dom, you know, you're getting in there in the ring, and I was watching the fight, and my emotion sort of as Kel was walking out to that ring was, I was incredibly nervous all of a sudden. We've had such a build-up. It seems like because of, we're going back to the Devin Alexander fight, really, we've all been waiting for this moment for Kel. Were you nervous at all, or were you pretty confident at that point?
The only time you ever think fighters, you know, are going to come unstuck in a fight is when you know they haven't put the work in. And the confidence in the training that Kel had for that fight, you know, was 100%. You know, I told a lot of people I thought it was a 60-40 fight, purely in Porter's favour, purely because we're in America. But the way Kel had trained and done his work, I was 100% confident he was going to win the fight. And I've been to America 3 or 4 times, and if that was the first time I'd been there, I would have thought to myself, you know, maybe the pressure, it would have been different and I would have felt different. But it's the same old story for me. If you prepare properly, you could be anywhere in the world, in any ring in the world. And as long as you can take, you know, that fighter into that ring in the best condition, it doesn't really matter where you are. So a lot of people were nervous. You know, me, it was another day in the office, because I got that much confidence in Kel doing the job that I thought all he's got to do is do what he normally does. But this time he's got the backing of the 16 weeks training, he's had the best preparation, everybody's, you know, chipped in and helped him. And just the way the whole camp went, I couldn't see him getting beat, not by Sean Porter, because in my opinion he wasn't a good enough boxer. He was a brawler, he was a scrapper, you know, he tried to take Kel out of his stride, but the pure boxing ability came with Kel Brook. So really, no, you know, the pressure wasn't, and I just thought Kel's going to win this.
The preparation's so good then. Greg Marriott is with us as well. Just explain exactly, you know, the part that you played in helping getting him ready for this world title shot.
Yeah, I mean, Dominic, obviously in the gym, when he's working and expending all his energy, you know, in calories, you know, Dominic would just letting me know how many calories he'd burnt. And I went back, you know, analysed the data and put that into the nutrition for him, you know, and fueled him up for the fight, basically.
We had the Tour de France here not so long ago, and we sort of did a big piece on that for Radio Sheffield in looking at what you have to put into your body when you're going through such a grueling event as that. I guess it's the same for boxing as well, isn't it?
Yeah, every sport. I mean, diet is the number one key. You know, a lot of people don't realise that. And, you know, with Kel, he's a born world champion. And on the night, I, as well as Dominic and everyone else, could see he was going to do it. And with the fuel that he had, the nutrition he had for 16 weeks, you know, that's a good long camp. And we knew, all of the team knew, that if, you know, we could fuel him, you know, myself, if I could fuel him for them 12 rounds, I knew he could be good. He's unstoppable. And that was the key, you know.
We saw him enjoying a celebratory burger. I think he put a picture of himself on Twitter afterwards. I'm guessing he didn't have too many burgers, though, in the build-up to the fight. Just for the people who are interested, what kind of things does he have to put in his body? What type of things does he have to eat and drink as he's getting ready for this chance that he's been waiting for?
Well, you know, at the first start of the 16 weeks, you know, we've got to analyse where he is with his weight, you know, bring it down safely. You know, a lot of people, they'll crash the weight off in the last few weeks, and that, you know, I'm not saying Sean Porter did that, but with seeing Sean Porter now, he's acting and, you know, just looking at him, he's weighing and having to take his boxer shorts off and all that, you know, surrounding him, it's not a good sign. And you've got to make the weight safely. So for Kel, the start of the 16 weeks, you know, I analysed where he was, you know, and thought 16 weeks is a long time. So the fuel that we could put in his body at the start, you know, there's no room for error. But, you know, you can be a bit more of a wide spectrum with the diet. And then as it closes into the final stages, you know, it's really, really, it has to be really calculated. And when it gets to that stage, that's like, you know, the kind of staples where you know it's going to work. And with every step of the way, he didn't falter once. So that's why we were 100% knowing that when he got in that ring, it was going to be unstoppable.
Tom, there's so much goes into this. It's not just, you know, like many people might just think, it's a bit like Rocky. You run up some stairs, you maybe go into a meat factory and you're ready for the fight. But there's so much goes into this, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, Greg hasn't given too much away there. You know, every fighter, every athlete wants carbohydrates. And, you know, Kel loves his food. So, you know, Greg had worked out the diet plan, you know, replaced the energy that he lost during training. And basically after that, it's more or less keeping him on track and saying, you know, develop this body. And if you look at the condition that Kel got into the ring, he was in the best shape of his life. You know, training wise, we had to organise sparring, we got the proper sparring partners in. You know, he was in the gym putting the hours in. He was at the university doing runs. He was down at Woodburn Road track doing track runs with all the kids in the gym. You know, he really, really pushed himself through the training. You can tell, you know, when you do those long camps, the athlete that you're training, you know, Kel was up for every session and he had to be. He never once walked off the track and said, I can't do that. You know, he'd fall over after he'd done four laps and then he had 2 minutes to recover and do it again, and he did it over and over again. We did it in Fortaventura, you know, in blazing heat. We did it in Sheffield, we did it in Las Vegas. So, you know, it's not just a case of running up steps, that's the old way of doing it. And when you see the end product on the night, the fight, it doesn't really reflect what he's done, only in the sense when you get to the end and he's hardly breathing and he's got through the 12 rounds, when previously we've seen Kel after 6 rounds, you know, basically blowing out of his backside, as they say. And, you know, we addressed that issue and we worked on it, and Kel worked on it, and he said to me afterwards, he goes, you know what, if I wasn't 100% fit, he goes, he would have gassed me out. He goes, he was so strong. He goes, he was hitting me around the back of the head, around the neck, around the kidneys, you know, low. He says, trying to take me out of my stride, and I just had to hold it together. He goes, but I had the energy and the skill set to deal with it. He says, and, you know, now, looking back now, he goes, every time I train, I'm going to have to be training for 16 weeks.
Well, I want to come to the fight in a moment, but Barry, I went down to the university to speak to Kel weeks before the fight. Yeah. And you were there already. You've been part of this all the way through. You've been doing a lot of the training that Kel's been doing. And you were talking about some of the grueling things that he's done to prepare himself for this. You've gone through them as well. Just explain some of the things you have to do and how tough it actually is.
The runs that we do up at university, Hallam University, sometimes I feel like I'm going to pass out. And you can't just stop on these treadmills. You can't stop. You have to just keep on going and keep on going. Sometimes you even get like black. You're just seeing black and white. But you can't, it's like a fight, you can't just give up. You have to just keep on continuing and just keep on running and running. And then you have your break and then you have to get up and do it again. And they're brutal, honestly. Them runs are brutal.
He put the work in and he won the world title. Let's get on to the fight then, Dom. And my experience of watching it, you know, I felt very nervous during that fight because the commentators were saying, they emphasised over and over again, American judges love busy fighters. Porter wasn't landing with a lot of his shots, but he looked busy. What were you thinking when you were watching it from the corner?
To be honest, in America, the setup is you have to sit quite back from the ring and you've got cameramen in the way. So we were really looking through people's legs and through the ropes and everything else. and I could only see certain fragments of the fight. But I believe, you know, a lot of people spoke to me afterwards and said they watched the Sky's coverage of it and they were very disappointed with Jim Watt doing the commentary because he put a really negative vibe, you know, on the fight. And they had a lot of people believing that, you know, Kell was behind, which, you know, Showtime actually had a positive vibe on, and they were the American channel saying, you know, Kell Brook's winning this fight. So I think it would have might have spoiled it a lot for the British fans watching it back home. But from where I was, I thought Kell was doing the cleaner work. He was trying to make a fight of it, where Sean Porter was spoiling a lot of the time, rabbit punching, and, you know, hoping that he was going to tag Kell with a shot and take him out of his game plan. But, you know, before the fight, I said to Kell, the first four rounds is going to be a firestorm. He's going to be on you like a rash. He's going to hit you with everything, take you out of his stride. And when he hasn't done that, because that's when you're going to take over. And that's exactly what happened. After four rounds, Kell thought, right, you've had your four rounds now. You're not going to do it for the next four rounds. I'm coming into it. And for me, the fourth round is when it really took off for Kell. He started getting dominant, pushing the guy back, hitting him with the cleanest shots. And by the end of the fight, it was Sean Porter who was backpedaling and hanging on and, you know, getting onto the ropes. And you could see, you know, Kell really dominated him.
Both fighters got a cut just above their eye for an accidental head clash. When that happens to Kell, especially when it happened as early as it did, are you worried a little bit? I mean, how do you manage that situation?
The one good thing about Kell is, you know, he never saw it. He dabbed at it once, but he knows me as a cuts man. I've done it lots of times, even with other fighters, and he never panicked. You know, a lot of people start going to pieces. Even, you know, I've seen Amir Khan with cuts and actually panicking about it. But Kell just sat there, thought, you know, Dominic can do this. No problem. My job is fighting. I'm not worrying about this. And he kept calm, you know. And if you think after two or three rounds, you never saw the blood coming from it, whereas Sean Porter's, even when they finished attending it in the corner, it was dripping with blood and his face was a mess. And I think Kell looked at that and thought, you know, you look a mess. And that drove Kell on, you know, to put even more pressure on him. But he kept calm under pressure, Kell, never let it bother him, and just got on with the job at hand.
By the end of the fight, I kind of got a feeling that if it went on another round or two, he was going to stop that fight.
Yeah, I think Kell was disappointed when he got out. He said he wasn't his best performance. But we were just looking for the win. And I think, you know, Kell's that type of guy that he don't just want to win a fight in America. He wants to make a statement. And, you know, all the top welterweights in America came to watch that fight. Came to watch Kell Brook. Because, you know, he's the second coming of Nazim Hamid, you know, so to speak, from Sheffield. And they all turned up to watch him. And he put on an impressive performance. And, you know, put Sean Porter firmly in his place on the back foot. And, like, I just think Kell was disappointed in the sense that he really wanted to knock that guy out.
There's a great picture that's gone around on Twitter and online, and it's a picture of a whiteboard in the dressing room with some interesting things written on it. And I wanted to ask you about that. What does Linda, listen mean?
Well, you know, the Kell's up onto, he does a lot of stuff, watches a lot of stuff on YouTube and Twitter, and he like I said before, he'd keep him happy putting down in front of a TV with a load of cartoons on, and he'd be laughing his head off, you know. And I think there's a video on YouTube with a little guy, and Barry's seen this, and probably Greg has, but I've never seen it. And they kept saying to me, "Oh, this Linda, I'm thinking, what are they on about? I ain't got time to look at that kind of stuff. And I think some little Chinese lad, and his favourite thing is Linda, which is his mom, and he's trying to explain to his mom, you know, when I'm with my grandma looking after me, she lets me do this, and his mum's saying, you can't do this, and he's going, Linda, and that was a comment. And it's just the comment what came out, what, you know, makes Kell chuckle. So we had the whiteboard with that on. We put a couple of things on. I think he said the chocolate brownie right hand. I mean, because he heard that, well, Barry picked up on it. He was getting interviewed, Sean Porter, and they said, what are you going to eat after you've boxed? And he went, his dad said, I know what he's going to eat cookies. His grandma likes cookies, gives him cookies. And he went, yeah, that's my weakness. So, you know, we picked up on that. And so Kell picked up and he said, yeah, he's going to get some chocolate cookies. He's going to get my chocolate brownie right hand type of thing. So it's that's what he got. So we had all these little things, and Kell came and saw it all on the board and had a little chuckle to himself. And it breaks the ice. You know, sometimes change rooms can be a tense environment. But really, you know, when Naz used to box, it was like a party in the change room beforehand. It was like it was Naz's party, and he was going to go out and beat somebody up, and then we were going to have another party. And it was like that on the night. You know, everybody was relaxed. We had some music playing. It wasn't like a man going out to get hung. It was like a champion's ready to take the title, you know, atmosphere. And, you know, that whiteboard set it all off.
We can talk about the preparation physically in terms of the nutrition, but do you think keeping him, you know, sane in America and doing everything right, getting him there at the right time, keeping him relaxed and in a good positive mood, And he just, you know, when he spoke to the media, he looked like a guy who was ready for this. There was no sort of worry in his face, in his voice. He looked like this was his time, and him being relaxed and ready to do this just seemed so important to everything.
Luckily, we've got a sponsor. Kill's got a sponsor called Diamond Resorts, and they've got a place in Vegas, bang next to the MGM Grand. And, you know, Kill looked out of his bedroom window, and it was maybe, say, 500 metres from where we were staying. And I said to Kill, that 500 metres is from where we are now to the MGM is the most important 500 metres of your life, because when you're fighting the MGM in Vegas, you know you've made it big time. And every morning he'd look through the window and the MGM's right out there. We went in, we saw all Floyd Mayweather's stuff, all the kitty boxed in. I said, this is where it happens, Kill. And we got fantastic accommodation in Vegas. We were central to all the big gyms. You know, we trained in all the big gyms around Vegas. And you could see Kell absorbing it all and say, this is the fight capital of the world, really. This is where you come when you're the A-player boxer. When you're the Floyd Mayweather, this is where you fight. And he absorbed all that in. It didn't overwhelm him. He wasn't overawed by it all. He soaked it up. You could see him thinking, yeah, this is my time. And, you know, he was walking down the strip and people, you know, were bumping into him. There's a lot of British out there. And, you know, Kell broke, yeah, I'm fighting in a couple week's time, and you could see him growing and growing. And when we landed in LA, we bumped into Eddie Hearn, and Kell's mood lifted. And then his mum and his parents and everybody else turned up, and you could see Kell thinking, yeah, you know, everybody's come to see me. This is my home environment. And really, when we got into the ring, it was all geared up for Kell Brook. In his mind, you know, he performed. It was like being in Sheffield Arena. Like, yeah, you know, I'm the star of the show. The only difference is this time he came out first to the ring instead of second, but he played it the way as if, you know, I'm Kell Brook, I'm the champion, this kid's come to try and beat me, and not the other way around.
Is he ready for what's going to happen now? I remember a few months ago being in Meadow Hall and just getting a drink, and I turn around and Kell Brook's there and he's hanging around and people are coming up to him and just chatting to him. I sense we're going to get to a point sooner or rather later when he goes to Meadow Hall and he's going to get mobbed. He's not going to be able to just walk around, that life is going to start to change for him, because after this and with the fights he's going to have lined up, he's going to be a superstar now.
Yeah, I mean, he goes to Meadow Hall, but the thing is, people in Sheffield are very respectful anyway, and they approach in the right manner. I think generally when you go outside of Sheffield, it's a bigger thing. You know, he goes down London, he's going to get that kind of stardom thing. But, you know, we were in Los Angeles for the build-up to the fight the week before the fight, and I phoned back a few times, and people say, no, you know, it's like when England are playing, it's like this big, you know, build-up. And really, we missed all that because we weren't getting that kind of feedback where we were. So, you know, it seemed a bigger event back home. So, I think when Kell arrives back in Sheffield this week, I think we'll see. You know, we'll see the build-up and the response that people are getting. Obviously now, he's one of the very, I think, one of the only six people who have ever been to America and won a world title. And that's, he's one of three legitimate world champions. There's Floyd Mayweather, there's Kell Brook, and there's Manny Pacquiao. So he's up there, you know, with the top welterweights.
That's the thing, isn't it? Because it used to be the heavyweight division, which was sort of full of the superstars. It's what everybody focused on. Because of Floyd Mayweather, because of Pacquiao, it's now the welterweight division where everybody's attention is focused, isn't it?
I think what we're going to have to do is get a few pounds on Kid Galahad and get him into that division, because it's going to be very lucrative. But yeah, there's six or seven good fighters in that division where there's some big fights what can be made, and that's where all the money is. And you know, Kell's going to make the money. He's going to be the name. He's got the looks. He's got the style. He's got the attitude for it, and you know, people love him.
Barry, just to go back to your experience of this again, and you talked about, you know, you see this and you must think, you know, this has to be me one day. And I know that you work so hard and you're going to put yourself in that position eventually, but does it just make you think, I want it now, when you can see all this and you still have to, we talk about patience with you an awful lot.
Yeah,
you're going to still have to be a bit patient, aren't you?
Sometimes I do, but it's Kell's time. It's not my time yet. It's Kell's. This, everything's focused on Kell at the minute. My time will come, and when it does come, I'll make sure I stay there for a long time.
After the fight, we all sat down having breakfast, and Barry came in sweating, and somebody said to him, I think it was Robert McCracken, Cole Frotcher's trainer, he says, where have you been? He went, I've been running this morning. And he like kind of looked at him and said, you've been running? He went, yeah. He says, you know, I've still got to carry on training because he's got a fight coming up. And like a lot of people, like, he's training, yeah, after a big fight, he's up in early, bright and breezy. And you know, Barry's going to put the time. And he said to me afterwards, he went, you know, my time's going to come. You know, Kel's seen the blueprint so many times with Nazim Hamid Jr. with Johnny Nelson. You see the blueprint, you've just got to follow it, do the training and follow the blueprint. And Barry's doing the same, he's following the same blueprint. And once you've got that, you know, blueprint in place, it's not so much that you have to change it, it's just that you have to get the fighter into that mode. And once Kel Brook stepped into that position and got onto that trip, you know, probably from the Carson Jones fight, it's a one-way ticket. You know, it's a one-way ticket to being a world champion. It's just if you can follow it. It's a tough path. There's a lot of hard work involved. But if you follow that, you're gonna become a champion.
I suppose the big thing is that you're prepared to do it, aren't you? I mean, we know how hard you train. Dom's talked about it there. Yeah. We know that you're going to be, one day you're going to put yourself in that position. And when that time comes, when it is your time, you're going to do everything it takes to make sure it happens for you.
Yeah, most definitely. When my time comes, I'm going to be champion for a very long time. A very, very long time, and I'm going to make sure when I do become champion, I never fall off track.
But it's all right, you know, we can talk about the welterweight division, but your division as well is interesting at the moment. There's still a couple of big fights that you would want, isn't there?
Some big names in my division. There's a guy called Leo Santa Cruz, Rogondao, Carl Frampton, Scott Quigg. They're all big names, and they're all big paydays for me.
When are you going to get a shot at someone like Quigg and Frampton? Because that's what everybody wants to see.
My next fight is on the September the 20th. And I'm fighting the number 6 in the world, a guy called Tyson Cave. And that should put me up higher ranked in all the governing bodies. And I personally don't think any of them want to fight me unless they have to fight me, like if I manage a challenge like Kelly's. And when my time comes, I'll be more than ready.
We saw this with other people, and you know, to a certain extent with Kel, is that you have to get that mandatory status because people will look at Barry and they'll think, I don't fancy some of that.
The position with Kel, you know, and Eddie Hearn was bang on the money. You have to become the mandatory and you have to win it, because if you don't and somebody gives you a voluntary chance, you get tied up in contracts and promotional deals with other promoters in America, and you then have to fight who they say you've got to fight. But when you do it the way Kel's done it, you come away from that fight with a free rein. You are in control of what you do. So it's a harder pattern to, you know, harder way to go getting the mandatory and winning it, especially going to America like Kel did. But if you do that, you are free of anybody else trying to hold you back, dictate how much you're getting. And it's the same with Barry. Barry's prepared to put the work in, get into that position, beat the people on their own terms, and then go away and do what he wants to do with his career. You know, that's the way to do it. And if you're a good fighter and you've got the belief in yourself, you will do it.
What's the sort of time frame that you're looking for Barry to get his chance? Are we maybe sort of talking a couple of years down the line here, sooner than that? How do you sort of
plan it out?
Personally,
I think, you know, by the summer next year, he's going to be in position, mandatory. You know, it might take another 6 months after that. So it might be from this point where we are now, or say November this year, in a year's time, is probably where Barry's going to be for a world title fight. And really, it's, you know, when Kel was down to face Devin Alexander and the fights kept falling through, sometimes it's a blessing in disguise. As one door closes, another one always opens. You know, Kel was a much more mature fighter at this stage. Personally, I think it was a good thing, because I don't think mentally he was prepared or maturity-wise. You know, it's a year and a half later. He's got a daughter now and a Veya. Things have settled down in his life. And you just see he's just matured a lot more mentally. And he took it all on board. You know, at the time when he was training for Devin Alexander, although he was in fantastic shape, there was other stuff. You could see there was other stuff going off in his mind. But he's had time to reflect, look back and think, you know, I've lost these opportunities. I cannot afford to waste any more time. I'm a year and a half behind schedule. And when he got in that ring, it was almost, I'm going to do anything to get this title. There's no way am I going to leave it in the ring or come out of the ring and think, I've done that wrong, I should have done this. He went in every round, and did what he had to do. He went in to win those rounds and win that fight.
It was visible, though, wasn't it, that he was a more mature fighter, a more mature person, if, you know, yeah. I don't think a man is saying that. I mean, he just looked different.
He got the confidence from doing the work. He, like I said, we've repeated this so many times, 16 weeks in camp, everybody made sacrifice, no more than Kel. You know, Kel Brook made the sacrifices, all the sacrifices that a fighter should do. His team around him did the same thing, kids from the gym, you know, trainers, everybody involved. Everybody put 100% into Kel Brook, from Eddie Hearn to Terry, his dad, to his mom, his family. Everybody put 100% into him. And on the night, Kel put in the 100% performance.
And I thought it was fair that, you know, people were pointing at the Ingle gym as well after the fight and giving it some credit, because if there's one thing you know what to do, it's to produce a champion, and you've done it again. You guys must have so much pride at what you've been able to achieve here.
Yeah, Brendan spent a lot of time with Kel. Kel came in at 9 years old, and for 9 years, you know, he was under, you know, in his formative years, he was under Brendan. You know, Brendan showed him the way, told him what was possible, you know, helped him in every possible way. And then he turned professional at 18, and the rest is history. But those years, getting that grounding in with Brendan, you know, he did the same thing with Naz, Ryan Rose, Johnny Nelson, Junior Witter. Them kind of things stick in your mind. And I think Kel just had it in his mind, you know, he trained Nazim Hamid. You know, Nazim Hamid was his idol. He used to come in and watch him. You know, we've seen all the footage watching him as a champion. And I think he just had this thing in his mind, but he never let go, that, you know, I can be like Nazim Hamid. I can be a world champion. You know, I've been trained by Brendan Ingle and the Ingle gym, and you know, they produce champions, and that's a big mental thing. And it's obviously paid off. He's our fourth world champion. I think we've got more world champions per square mile in Sheffield than anywhere else in the country, and hopefully Kigala's going to be the next one. But I think Kel seriously believes, you know, he was born to win a world title fight, and with that kind of belief, it's going to take some, you know, pushing back.
I spoke to Eddie Hearn yesterday, and he was talking about the future now, and that there's potentially going to be a fight on the 6th of December, the first defence, and then beyond that, you know what everybody's talking about now, you know what everybody wants to see. What do you think would be the next best step for Kel?
Yeah, he's, you know, Eddie's going to get him the next opponent. It could be the mandatory challenger, but you know, I think they're talking about a big fight with Amir Khan early summer, spring, and that's the obvious fight, because it's a multi-million pound fight. It's the biggest fight in England. You know, they've got a grudge between them. Amir Khan's been, you know, a mouthing off, saying he's done this to Kel and that to Kel, and he probably thought Kel Brook was never going to get to this stage where he's got to, but now the shoe's on the other foot, so to speak, and Kel's in the driving seat, and it's Amir Khan who's going to be chasing Kel for a fight. And I think, you know, Kel's not got a problem with that fight. He's not going to duck Amir Khan, and it makes sense for Amir Khan. Like I said, Khan's been to America, he's proved himself, he's been chinned a few times, but he's come back strong, and I think that's a big stadium fight.
What about his adjustment to this weight? Is he better prepared to handle somebody with Kel's power? Because we've all seen it, he looks quick, he looks sharp, he looks impressive in the first two or three, four rounds, but you're just kind of waiting for him to take that shot, and when it happens, it falls apart at times for Amir, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's, don't forget though, Amir Khan's got a lot of experience. He's a similar age to Kel. He's been to the Olympics. He's got a lot of experience. And, you know, when people, just like Kel dealt with Sean Porter, that kind of style, fighters always learn to adapt. And Amir Khan's plan will be to keep away from Kel's power. And in fact, there's skillful enough fighters to do that. And, you know, maybe Amir Khan can do that. But we'll only see on the night. You know, he'll have his game plan, Kel will have his. And Kel's plan won't be just to hit Kel, you know, Amir Khan with a right hand. There'll be a lot more stuff involved than that, because you have to take every fight as it comes. We trained Kel Brook for the Porter fight in a particular way, because we knew what was going to happen. And we'll have to look at Amir Khan when that fight comes around, look at his strengths, his weaknesses, and build another plan just like we did.
If he beats Khan, or, you know, I know we're looking quite far ahead here, I mean, there's some even bigger fights than that potentially. I mean, I spoke to Porter 3 weeks ago. If I beat Kel Brook, I want Mayweather.
Everybody wants Mayweather. He's the cash cow. He's the golden goose. He's probably not got much long left on his contract. He's got two or three more fights. Personally, you know, I think everybody wants that fight. But Mayweather's in the commanding seat, and he'll say, right, it's your turn next. Come and have your chance. But, you know, I think in an ideal world, you know, I don't know Mayweather, he'd probably look at the British team and think, you know what, I'll let Amir Khan and Kel Brook beat each other up. And whoever's left in that fight, maybe they've damaged himself enough, you know, to give me, you know, put him with me, and I'll take my chances. So I think the winner of Khan and Brook would be a legitimate fight, because there's two fighters there calling out Mayweather. Well, you know, if I was Mayweather, that's what I'd say. Well, you two fight each other, I'll have a look at you, see how you go on, and then I'll have the winner. And I think that's, you know, that's probably what's going to happen.
Greg, just to sort of wrap this up now, you know, you're going to continue to work with Kel now, because it's a big time for him. I mean, Eddie Hearn said it to us yesterday, that in many ways the achievement is that he's won the world title, but it all starts here now, because there are so many big opportunities for Kel to come, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, me and Kel, not just obviously, you know, on the diet aspect of things, you know, we've got a good relationship between us both. You know, I know what makes Kel tick, you know, I know what doesn't make him tick, kind of thing. So we've got a good relationship, you know. So he's very happy with obviously what I've done. He was fueled for the fight. He's never, as you can see, the condition he were in, you know, he's never been in that type of condition. You know, take that off to Kel, he's the one that does the hard work. You know, you can give him the plan and say, this is what you've got to stick to, but, you know, he's put the hard work in, and that's obviously why he's a world champion. But yeah, you know, there is a lot to come from this, and yeah, I look forward to obviously working with Kel.
And we were all amazed when we saw him in the weigh-in, and just the incredible shape that he was in.
Yeah.
Do you think there's still room for a little bit more that he can get out that as he approaches these huge fights coming now?
Definitely. Like I said, you know, you never stop learning. And with Kel, with this camp, he's never been in this kind of shape. You know, so if you take this camp as an example and you carry on another 16 week, you can only get better. because obviously it's not like he's at the top of his game and he's been there for 3 years, you know, doing the diet and looking in incredible shape. This is the start of many things to come, and that's what I believe with Kel. And he's going to go on to be, you know, the champ of the world in all the belts. I believe that.
Could unify. Just to finish, Barry, with you, quick reminder, your next fight, when is it?
And September 20th. And I think it might be eliminated for the WBA. Puts me up there in the world rankings higher. And against a kid called Tyson Cave, a Canadian who's tough. I want to win a world title at the same time as this next year. And hopefully there'll be two world champions in the Ingle gym.